So I want to acknowledge a couple of fellows that contributed to this talk. Jordan Thomas, who recently finished a master's with me, has worked with me for this past year as a research specialist, and I'm really happy to say that he's going to stay with me and go on for a PhD. And then Dr. Mike Smith, who I've really sincerely enjoyed having the opportunity to collaborate with ever since I joined the faculty at Mizzou. So over the next 2 days, you're going to hear a lot about technology and beef production. And for those of us that are sort of entering the twilight years of our careers, it's a bit disappointing to see the low adoption rates that we've seen in terms of technology in the beef cattle industry. And I hope after this two-day session that you'll, if you aren't attuned to some of the things that you'll be hearing, I hope that you'll change your mind, because I really think there are some opportunities. The challenges that we all face relative to the industry, I think, are highlighted on this slide. And then one of those, obviously, is the aging producer population. We need to figure out ways that we can get more young people into the beef industry. One of the complicating factors is the fact that we deal with a segmented industry that, in many cases, is steeped in tradition. And I think we have to break out of that mold in certain respects. We all face rising input costs. The inventory situation is a big issue, and I think will continue to be for a time, because we're not going to crawl out of the hole we're in. And there's also the idea that, and it's a real idea, that we are going to face increasing global competition. And there's, in general, been a perception that there's a lack of incentives to do very many of the things that you'll hear about over the next couple of days. I tend to be more of an optimist, and I think one of the things you will hear, and I think you'll see based on some of the slides that not only I'll be presenting, but from what you'll hear over the next couple of days, is that there really is an awful lot of on-the-shelf technology that works, and I think there's a real place for it in a lot of management systems. The other thing is, if you look at CattleFax's most recent data relative to increasing demand for higher quality product, not only here in the United States, but really, in terms of our export market, CattleFax indicates that roughly every carcass produced in the United States, the export market is currently adding $300 to the value of that carcass. So going forward, in terms of keeping producers in production, I think we're going to have to really take that seriously. And thirdly, I think the other thing you're going to have to consider is that there really are marketing opportunities or incentives that really will help you add and capture value. So, if you look at the most recent NOM survey from 2008 as to why producers have failed to adopt reproductive procedures, and what I've got highlighted here on this slide are three of those practices: estrus synchronization, artificial insemination, pregnancy diagnosis. By far and away, the largest response category in terms of failure to use any of these has been time and labor. I'm really proud to say, as a member of the task force and a member of the beef reproduction leadership team, and I think it's important to point out that what you see on these lists of recommended protocols is the collective sort of wisdom or decision-making, not just from the task force, but those folks that really implement these protocols in the field. So representatives from the four major AI companies, the pharmaceutical houses that make the reproductive products, as well as the veterinary community, more or less have come together since 2004 to really draft this list of protocols based on the most recent and best data. If you go back and look at where we began to see an increase in beef semen sales in the United States, highlighted on this slide, what this slide illustrates are three things collectively in each of these bars: export beef semen sales, custom frozen beef semen, and then domestic beef semen sales. If you go back to 2004-05, in that time period, when the timed AI protocols and the protocol sheets first came out, I don't think we can attribute all this increase in beef semen sales to that. But I do think it had a big hand in increased use of AI in the beef industry. And our only hope is that we can continue to see this occur. I would have to say that a large part of this is a result of fixed-time artificial insemination. And go back to the slide that I showed highlighting the reasons why producers don't use some of the procedures that are listed. A lot of it boiled down to time and labor, and I think that's one of the really big advantages that we've seen in terms of increased use of these technologies, simply due to the fact that we're able to schedule things now as opposed to past years when those opportunities weren't really that available. So for the next 45 minutes, what I want to take some time and review with you, I want to go back and review some considerations related to timed AI for heifers and cows. My talk will focus primarily on timed artificial insemination protocols for cows and heifers. And then, as has been already mentioned, there'll be an opportunity this evening for questions and then more thorough discussion to hopefully get all those questions that you have perhaps answered. So let's first talk about management considerations related to synchronization and fixed-time AI. And when our group conducted a series of meetings, and Eldon Cole is here, I can remember having a meeting at the Joplin Regional Stockyards. And for those of you that have been at Joplin, that barn was actually completely packed. Because there was a lot of interest as to whether or not these protocols could work or would work. And once we explained the logistics of the protocol, this is probably the question that we received more from producer audiences than any, was do we know what to expect if calving from cows that conceive on the same day to the same sire? And John Bader, who did his graduate work with me, basically put a lot of this information together. And what you see highlighted on the slide are these six panels illustrate calving profiles of cows that conceived on the same day to the same sire listed above each of those panels. And so you can see at location one, sire A had a birth weight EPD of -0.3, calving ease direct of +11. And the cows that conceived on the same day to that particular sire calved from day 271 of gestation to 290 with a mean calving date of 281. And that's replicated across each of those. What you see on these panels is each of those green bars illustrates day 283 of gestation, which is what more or less the red books identify as the average gestation length. When we boiled all the data down, essentially what we realized was is that if we synchronize a group of cows today, say 100 cows, and 60% of those cows or 60 of those cows conceive today to that given insemination. The maximum number of cows that we saw calve on the peak day of the calving season was 20%. So let's do the arithmetic. So if I breed 100 cows, 60 of those cows conceive and 20% calve on the peak day, that's 12 cows calving. And quite honestly, what we've heard from herd owners that have implemented this technology is the fact that they've really appreciated it because they feel like they're doing a better job managing their cows over a shorter period of time during the calving period. So the other thing I think we need to talk about is the impact of synchronization on calving distribution. And for those of you that read Beef Magazine and follow Harlan Hughes, the economist that writes for Beef, and the work that he's done, the really good work that he's done over the years, basically what Harlan's data would indicate is that opportunities for increasing profits lie in managing females from the later calving intervals forward toward the first and second calving intervals. And that high production herds see 61% of the calves born by day 21, 85% by day 42, and 94% by day 63. Well, this slide illustrates some of our early work in Missouri from four locations, three of our experiment station farms or centers, and then a fourth from MFA's research facility over at Marshall, Missouri. But essentially, all of these cows were placed on a timed AI protocol and then exposed for natural service 10 days after the appointment breeding. There's 1,500 calvings illustrated on this graph, and what you could see is that the cumulative calf crop percent by day 15 was 65%, by day 21 it was 70%, by day 30 it was 82%, and by day 42 is 93%. Now think about the implications related to this. One of the big advantages that you'll realize in using these protocols is the fact that you increase the uniformity of calves simply due to the age grouping that you realize as a result of these programs. The second thing, which is more or less, as far as I'm concerned, the gravy added onto it, is the improvement in genetic performance that you're going to realize as a result of using the superior genetics that each of these AI companies offer. So this graph illustrates work from our Thompson Research Center, where my students and I do a lot of our work. And what this graph illustrates is the cumulative calf crops for the first 46 days over 12 calving seasons. And what you can see on that red line, that bottom line, before we began work at that location, it's a very well-managed herd, but they had not used synchronization or AI at the particular location. And so that illustrates what the calving profile looked like relative to that time frame. When we imposed synchronization and AI at that particular location and bred the cows, illustrated by that blue line, And in this case, all those calves were being inseminated with the aid of HeatWatch, which is a 24-hour, round-the-clock computerized heat detection system. It was natural to us that you would see that line shift to the left. But what really surprised us is now in more recent years, we breed all the cows at that location based on the protocols that we're using. They have one opportunity appointment breeding, and then 2 weeks later they'll go into cleanup pastures. But essentially we were able to further shift that line even further to the left, which to me is highly encouraging in terms of what you see relative to the benefits from this over time. So our group and those members of the task force that are involved with a lot of the data that I'll present today have focused a lot of our work on the development of highly effective and economical estrus synchronization programs. And I'd emphasize that we've worked hard relative to development of those protocols for both heifers and cows. And one of the dilemmas all of you will face going into any breeding season is the cyclicity status of your females, whether they are heifers or cows, and which treatment or which protocol is going to give you the most bang for your buck relative to that. The focus has been on excellent pregnancy rates, and I think, or as good a pregnancy rates as we can reasonably expect. And the end goal has been to either reduce that AI period or heat detection period, or ultimately produce protocols that result in appointment breeding or fixed time AI. So a couple considerations related to heifer management. George already talked about the fact that heifers conceive earlier during their first breeding season, stay in the herd longer, and produce more pounds of beef over their lifetime. This is a list of factors that I think are important relative to considerations going into that first breeding season. And they're a key part of our heifer program in Missouri. We do place an emphasis on nutritional development of the heifers. All the heifers go through a pre-breeding exam that involves a reproductive tract score and pelvic measurements. And we encourage that producers use synchronization and then couple that with appropriate sire selection. So I want to take just a moment to review with you the track scoring system. And I know Dan Stein is going to talk in more detail about this tomorrow night. But as far as I'm concerned, this is a really terribly underutilized technology in the industry. Because based on the data I'm going to show you, you can see how significant it is relative to predicting how heifers are going to perform as a result of a breeding program and in response to a synchronization treatment. But the data that I'll show you now we're beginning to collect in Missouri, it actually highlights differences relative to heifer's performance in timed AI programs. So the scores are very simple. They're a subjective evaluation of the reproductive tract development of the heifer. They range from 1 to 5. When we talk about the cycling status of the heifers, a track score of 1 indicates that the heifer is infantile. Track score of 2 indicates that the heifer is probably greater than a month away from reaching puberty. Track score of 3 is probably within a month of reaching puberty. And scores of 4 and 5 indicate that the heifer is cycling. Scores of 4 indicating that the heifer is in the follicular phase of her cycle, and 5 is indicating that she's in the luteal phase. So how does the track present itself? When we talk about the uterine horns, track scores 1 and 2 indicate that those heifers have virtually no tone at all to the track. Track score 3 has slight tone. Score 4, since that heifer's in the follicular phase of her cycle, she's going to be under the influence of estrogen. The track's going to present itself with excellent tone, and the uterine horns are going to be coiled. And when we assign a score of 5, essentially what we're talking about is that heifer's under the influence of progesterone during the luteal phase, and her uterine horns are going to be more distended. When we palpate the ovaries, essentially what we find is those heifers that track score 1 virtually have no activity at all. Scores of 2 and 3, you can see you have increasing follicle size. When you get to a 4, you have a preovulatory size follicle, and a score of 5 indicates that the heifer actually has a palpable CL. Now, George talked about effective implants, and I will caution you that we're entering a phase right now where we're going to be breeding a lot of heifers that we probably ought not to. But if you have producers or herds that you work with that are purchasing heifers and they do not know the management status of those heifers prior to the time they were purchased, ask questions as to whether or not those heifers were implanted. And it, by all means, as far as I'm concerned, you need to get those heifers checked. Because speaking from experience, I've gone into implanted sets of heifers, and what's illustrated or shown on this table is work from really good work from Auburn University, looking at weights and measurements of heifers that were implanted with a Synovex SEEP implant either at birth, day 21, day 45, compared to controls. And essentially, all of these heifers were allowed to reach puberty and then were harvested on the same day of the ester cycle. And what you can see in almost every instance is that this disruption that George talked about in terms of glandular development is significant, but it's also palpable. So when you get into these heifers, there's a real disconnect in many cases in terms of how those heifers appear phenotypically, but also how those tracks present themselves to you. So when we talk about the track scoring procedure, it should be done, as far as we're concerned, 4 to 6 weeks before breeding. It allows you time to make some adjustments if you need to. And as George indicated, the green light comes on when roughly 50% or greater of those heifers have track scored 4 or 5. So real quickly, why use synchronization? Obviously, because we can get more heifers pregnant. But the other thing is that using the progestin-based protocols that Dr. Smith talked about, either MJ or Cedar, they'll jumpstart those non-cycling heifers, and they're very effective at doing that. This is some early data from our heifer program in Missouri, with about 11,000 heifers in this table, but it illustrates pregnancy rates of heifers in natural service versus synchronized and AI'd herds, and all these heifers were placed on the MGA-based protocol. You can see the data is broken down by track score. NS at the top of each of those columns represents natural service bred heifers, no synchronization imposed. SAI represents synchronized and AI'd, and of the 1,000 heifers, there were 1,000 heifers in the natural service, no AI, no synchronization AI group, and over 10,000 in the synchronized and AI group. And with the exception of the track score 1 heifers, essentially what you can see in every instance relative to the corresponding track score, there were significant improvements in the pregnancy rates at the end of 21 days among those heifers that went on a synchronization program. So I want to move now to a discussion of the timed AI protocols for heifers. And if you look at the protocol sheets, essentially there are 4 protocols listed. 2 short-term protocols, the 7-day and the 5-day co-sync Cedar protocol, and 2 long-term protocols, the 14-day Cedar prostaglandin and MGA prostaglandin. So I'm going to first begin with a discussion of the long-term protocols and how do they compare. Essentially, if you look at how these protocols are designed, they're very similar. The 14-day Cedar PG program, essentially, Cedars go in on a Monday. 2 weeks later, they come out on a Monday. You count 16 days, administer prostaglandin, and then the heifers are time-bred at 66 hours with GnRH administered at AI. The MGA prostaglandin protocol, which has really been for years the benchmark relative to synchronization programs in heifers, 14 days of MGA, wait 19 days, administer prostaglandin, and then schedule the appointment greeting at 72 hours with, following prostaglandin with GnRH administered at AI. For years, many of you know that the MGA prostaglandin program, the original protocol was designed with a 17-day interval between MGA withdrawal and prostaglandin. Cliff Lamb and Gene Deitcher, he was at K-State, and then Gene Deitcher at Nebraska, more or less reevaluated that. And I think more or less the recommendation now is to leave that 19-day interval between MGA withdrawal and prostaglandin. Our group developed the 14-day Cedar program, and essentially one of the things that we see relative to this is, and we see a lot of veterinary use in terms of combining health and reproduction in a single management step relative to use of this protocol, but it's very similar, as I mentioned earlier, in comparison with the MGA-based protocol. So our group actually compared these two protocols on the basis of heat detection. And essentially, in this case, all of these heifers that were in, as part of this, included as part of this study, were on the heat watch system. This was done in collaboration with the Circle A facility in Lionville, Iowa, where we had the luxury of putting large numbers of heifers on the heat watch system. For those of you that have used either of these protocols and seen or observed the estrus response coming off either MJ or Cedar, this is what the profiles will look like. Because of the way MJ clears from the animal system, in contrast to the way it clears after a 14-day Cedar treatment, you're going to see a more prolonged or extended interval to estrus coming off MJ as compared to the Cedar, which is going to be a much more robust response. If we look at the actual mean interval to estrus after MJ or Cedar removal, essentially what we saw was the mean interval to estrus after MJ was 134 hours versus 38 for the Cedar-treated heifers. And those numbers that highlight the variance for interval to estrus more or less What that tells us is the degree of synchrony that we see relative to a comparison of the two protocols. So a larger number means that the heifers are more spread out, the synchrony is reduced. A smaller number indicates that the synchrony is much tighter. If we then look at the more important timing of distribution of estrus after prostaglandin, prior to the time those heifers are going to be inseminated, the gray bars on this graph illustrate the 14-day cedar-treated heifers, and the black bars represent the MGA-treated heifers. And again, if we look at run the stats on those values, essentially the mean interval to estrus, which is interesting here, that mean interval to estrus among the MGA-PG-treated heifers, there's only about an hour difference in terms of that mean interval to estrus between the two protocols. And those variances for interval to estrus came together closer, but there was still an advantage from the heat watch data to the 14-day cedar-treated group. When we boil the data down, and I would say that our group has looked at it relative to heat distribution. Rick Funston has a study that came out this last year where they looked at a comparison of the two protocols on the basis of timed insemination with about 700 heifers. Let's first begin with a discussion in terms of the heifers that are bred according to estrus. But when heifers were inseminated on the basis of observed estrus, there were no differences between treatments for synchronized conception or pregnancy rates despite the improvement in synchrony of estrus after prostaglandin among cedar-treated heifers. The key to use of MGA, because our group has worked with MGA, and I know a lot of other folks in this audience have as well over the years, the key to making MGA work is intake and assuring that intake is consistent on a daily basis. They need to be fed at about the same time every day to get the results that you would hope to achieve. Finally, from Rick's study, pregnancy rates after fixed-time AI did not differ either. And so either of those two long-term protocols really work effectively in terms of setting the cattle up. But again, the difference between the two protocols is when you put the cedar in on the 14-day cedar-treated groups of heifers, you know that they're getting what they need. The key to making MGA work is assuring that they get that half a milligram dose of MGA consistently on a daily basis. Well, we turn our attention now to the multi-state cedar trial, in other words, the short-term protocols. Cliff Lamb led a very extensive project back a number of years ago now. And essentially, that work resulted in the development of the seven-day protocol. And essentially, there were four treatments evaluated in that study. The top two you can see on each of those that involved a combination of heat detection and AI. Each involved a seven-day cedar with or without the administration of GnRH at cedar insertion, followed by prostaglandin on day seven. All the heifers were heat detected up to 84 hours, and those heifers that failed to exhibit estrus were then appointment bred with GnRH at AI. And then they were compared to heifers in the lower panels, as you can see there. Again, the same experimental design relative to seven-day cedar with or without GnRH at cedar insertion. And in this case, all the heifers were appointment bred at 60 hours with GnRH-administered AI. Large numbers of heifers in each of these groups, over 500. And what you can see is that very similar results in terms of the groups that were inseminated based on more or less the combination approach. And an advantage in the timed AI group relative to those that actually received GnRH at the time cedars were inserted. So if we look at kind of boil that information down from that series of trials, basically GnRH at cedar insertion did not improve pregnancy rates after timed AI. GnRH at cedar insertion did not alter the percentage of heifers detected in estrus or the distribution of estrus after prostaglandin. And more or less a combination of detecting estrus in AI before cleanup AI enhanced pregnancy rates over fixed time AI. The one point that I would make relative to this, and I think it's something that all of us that work on the academic and research side of this have observed, is that the consistency in response when administering GnRH to heifers versus cows is much less predictable. We typically do not see as consistent a response when we administer GnRH to heifers. And the reasoning for that is still yet, as far as I'm concerned, to be determined. The most recent protocol to be added to the list is the 5-day co-sync cedar protocol, and essentially this is a very similar to the 7-day protocol. This was developed by Alan Bridges and Mike Day, Mike Day's lab, and essentially very similar to the 7-day co-sync cedar, but GnRH is administered at the initiation of this protocol. In this case, however, the cedar is only in place for a period of 5 days. Prostaglandin, or the initial injection of prostaglandin, is administered at the time the cedars are removed. But as you more or less glean from the presentations earlier, specifically from Dr. Smith's talk, when you administer GnRH, that essentially, if you have a follicle that's capable of responding to that injection, essentially what will occur is the formation of an accessory CL. And after a 5-day period, those accessory CL are not fully capable of responding to a single injection of prostaglandin. So that warrants a second, or necessitates a second injection of prostaglandin, in this case roughly 8 hours later, and the heifers are appointment bred at 60 hours with GnRH administered at AI. Cliff Lamb put together a really nice data set compiling a lot of the results relative to comparisons of various studies. And I've highlighted or tried to bold two of those studies where there were, in the third row there, you can see there was actually a significant advantage of the 5-day cedar over the 7-day over the 7-day protocol. And in that first study, those results were actually approaching significance. To date, the work that George Perry and Alan Bridges and others have done, there really hasn't been any significant difference between the 5-day protocol and the longer-term protocols. But I think a lot of that's going to be dependent relative to the classes of cattle that you work with. I want to take a moment now and just share some field data from our heifer program in Missouri. And these are really recent numbers that we've pulled together. And Jordan Thomas is responsible for putting this information together. This table shows a summary of track scores of timed AI pregnancy rates for 14,500 heifers that were evaluated in our program from the spring of 2010 to 2014. And what you can see on this slide is that the pregnancy rates by track score, it really points out, again, the necessity of doing these track scores or performing these track scores before heifers go on a protocol. Because if you get into a set of heifers that a high percentage of those are ones, twos, and threes, you probably ought to rethink what you're doing. As you can see there, there are significant differences in terms of improvements in pregnancy rates resulting from timed AI. And I'm going to show you some data now relative to how they performed on the basis of the various protocols that are currently being used. So this first table illustrates the track score 1 heifers. Virtually, we have very little data on track score 1 heifers because now producers in our program fully appreciate the fact that it's a waste of time to try and get those heifers bred, either to appointment breeding or even at the end of the breeding season. So because the numbers are really limited there, that really tells you that most of those heifers head to the feed yard and aren't exposed for breeding. When we boil the twos and threes down by protocol, what's shown here are results comparing the 7-day Cosyncla cedar, MGA prostaglandin, and the 14-day cedar. 280 heifers in the non-cycling group on the 7-day, 230 in the MGA prostaglandin, and over 4,000 in the 14-day cedar. You can see there's a significant advantage among heifers on the 14-day cedar over the other two protocols. If we look at it in comparison to the cycling heifers and over 500 heifers in each of the 7-day and MGA prostaglandin groups, and over approaching 9,000 in the 14-day cedar, you can see, again, there's an advantage to the heifers that were on the 14-day cedar. When we put those groups together, and again, this is the situation that all of you are going to be faced with. You're going to be wanting to breed sets of cattle that you do not have 100% cyclicity rates on. And so again, what we can see here is when we pool the data on those heifers, we are seeing advantage to the 14-day cedar-treated group. I will have to say that in Missouri, a big proponent in terms of increased use, and you can see those numbers are highly skewed in terms of the numbers of heifers on those protocols, but our veterinary community is really the advocates of use of this protocol because it simplifies things from a management standpoint and the number of trips through the chutes because they're administering the pre-breeding booster vaccinations, they're doing the track scores, and they're beginning the sync program. Finally, going back to the point I made relative to global competition, Mike Smith and I were asked to go to Russia a couple of years ago and weren't able to go because of scheduling, but we talked back and forth with the group over there relative to, I think I might have a problem here.